Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome back to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Helgi Olafsson. He is an extraordinary individual who wears multiple hats, excelling as an ultra runner, a super yacht chef, and the owner of EcoPath Endurance. What sets him apart is his resilience and determination, particularly in the face of ankylosing spondylitis, a challenging and complex autoimmune arthritis. Despite battling AS, Helgi has not only become a three-time triple crown of 200s finisher, but has also completed 14 ultra marathons over 200 miles each. His achievements extend beyond personal victories. He's also a passionate advocate for the AS community. Helgi uses his platform to raise awareness about the disease and actively supports the Spondylitis Association of America. In April of 2025, Helgi will take on the inaugural Arizona Monster 300 Endurance Run. He has teamed up with Willoughby Media to create a documentary called Sonoran Odyssey, 300 Miles of Grit and Glory. The film, which will showcase the seven-day journey of Helgi and his support crew through a rugged and unforgiving desert, is also being postured as a fundraiser for the Spondylitis Association of America. To learn more about how you can get involved and support the project, visit SAA's website at spondylitis.org/Helgi, H-E-L-G-I. And on that note, I will welcome you back to SpondyCast. Helgi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Jill. It's awesome to be here. And that was quite the introduction.
Well, you are quite the man. So I have been watching you since we last spoke. And I think you were someone who is never going to give in to defeat. So I'm sure showing up today for SpondyCast was easy, but what made you want to come back and what do you hope to share today?
Well, I always love the opportunity to raise awareness for AS. And since we last spoke, I had a kind of a different project in mind and change gears a little bit to doing a smaller project, but kind of a project that packs a bigger punch in a shorter amount of time. And that is surrounded around the Arizona Monster 300, which is also going to be an opportunity to raise awareness for ankylosing spondylitis. And it's really exciting for me because it's a new style of fundraiser. Using a film to fundraise for Spondylitis Association of America is something that I haven't actually done in the past. I've done films before, and I have done a documentary surrounding one of my races, which was called Movement as Medicine. That was around the Cocodona 250 a few years ago. But this one is special because we're actually engaging with the community to help support the project and the production of the film, which also benefits the Spondylitis Association of America. And I think that one of the things that has always been missing from my fundraising efforts and awareness raising efforts is that I do have AS, and yes, I do run very lengthy ultra marathons, and you know, some folks could look at me and be like, that guy can do this and that's great, but I have AS and I can't do that with my AS. And I understand that. I get that a lot, and I appreciate that because there's so many folks who have different severities of ankylosing spondylitis or multiple conditions associated with it. And not every condition is the same. But because of the way that we're doing this fundraiser, we're giving people the opportunity to get involved and support without actually having to run the miles, for instance. And you know, there's a few fundraising initiatives going on, other than just going and clicking the donate button. We have kind of gamified it a little bit and given people the opportunity to sign up for any of the miles that I will be running during the race, for a small donation that will, that, you know, 25% of that donation will support the Spondylitis Association of America. And if the fundraiser is extremely successful and we raise enough money to, you know, fund the film, then everything over the cost of the film goes to Spondylitis Association of America. So that's the real goal here, is to make the fundraiser very successful so that Spondylitis Association of America can benefit greatly from it, rather than just getting the 25%, which still is great. I mean, so far we're at, we've raised about $8,000.
Oh, and wow.
So that's 2,000 for spondylitis. And the cost of the film is going to be around 20,000, all said and done. So if we can get anything over 20,000, then all of the donations go to Spondylitis Association of America. Back in 2021, I did the Trans Triple Crown of 200s, which we raised around 21,000. And so I'm hoping that this one beats that. And, you know, it's not really all about money. It's great to have money, and nonprofits need money to, you know, run their programs and to have all this support that the Spondylitis Association of America offers. It does cost money, but, you know, there's farther reaching effects than just the money. And I think that the community is a really important part of all that. And, you know, just having community involved, and say, Mary Jo and Bob over in Eastern United States have seen something that I've done in the past, and they're like, man, that's a cool thing that that guy's doing. I really want to show my support. And they say, okay, well, I'll donate $10. And then they get awarded a random mile within my race. And then what happens is with the GPS, you know, capabilities, I record the actual race that I do, and the data gets published on Strava. Strava is a platform that a lot of athletes use, and non-athletes, but basically it's a way to record your run and analyze your data and stuff like that. So some of the different things are the gradient adjusted pace. So if I'm going uphill, for instance, it may be a slower pace overall, but it doesn't analyze it that way. It analyzes it, you know, including that I'm going uphill. And so the gradient adjusted pace could be anything throughout the race. And there's no way of me, you know, it's a fair way to get the data. And just afterwards,
share that with people.
Yeah,
I mean, I think, like you said, it's not all about money, and in nonprofits it's never all about the money, right? Or in like documentary filmmaking, I think. And you know, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately, and like you're an inspiration in this, is and I hear this from people I talk to that listen to Spondycast, and you probably hear the same thing, is like, this disease needs support and dollars to raise awareness, because I don't think that the general public understands the complexity of the disease that so many people deal with. And I'm sure you hear it. People are like, well, I don't know how you can always be running around like a lunatic and traveling and doing this. And that was a lot of hard work, right? I could barely walk 10 years ago. And I know you've had challenges, but like the idea of the dollars, they help to illuminate the tragedy of like the dreams that don't get realized, because we're not diagnosing this disease and we're not aware of this disease as a public, right? And I think that to me is like the importance of the dollars, and to have like you were just talking about the gradients that you can watch in Strava, is the ability to really understand and have the human connection to feeling what this disease is about and what it takes to overcome. Cause like, I'm sure we could get into this in a bit, but like, how did the idea, how did the idea come up? And maybe the first question is like, where was the aha moment to do the Sonoran Odyssey? And I know it's important for you, but like, what was the moment where you were like, no, I'm not going to do the longer one. I'm not going to do the multiples. I'm going to do the 300 and we're going to crush it and show the world what this disease is about.
Well, but I mean, personally, financially, it was one of the biggest reasons, was because it cost me money to be able to take, you know, 5 weeks off to go and do, to just run through the forest. I mean, I'd love to do that if I could, but unfortunately I also have, you know, a life to manage. So that was the main thing. But then, you know, because I have been known to adapt, I was thinking to myself, well, I can still make an impact with just doing the Arizona Monster 300. I've done Cocodona 250 before. And just for the listener, what you're referring to is that originally I was going to run the Arizona Monster 300, and then with Brandon Hozak, who also has AS, and we were going to go through to the start line of the Cocodona 250 and then run that. But I have since withdrawn from Cocodona 250 and changed the plan to just doing the Monster.
Got it.
So, you know, Destination Trail is the family who puts on those, the Monster and Bigfoot, Tahoe and Moab, which are other 200s that I've done. So I've done a lot of those races and I'm more familiar with the Destination Trail family. Nothing against Aravaipa, who puts on Cocodona 250. They do a phenomenal job and it's a very amazing experience, especially with the media, the live stream media that they provide for the race. It's revolutionary, even. But the Destination Trail, I know a lot more people within the race organization, and you know, doing a film there was something that I thought would be really cool, both for myself and you know, raising awareness for ankylosing spondylitis. But also, this is an inaugural year adventure, and there haven't been any films created for this adventure yet. So it'll be great for future hopefuls who want to learn about, you know, what the race looks like and what it's going to take to put together a finish at that race. So, you know, those were great enticing factors for me in creating the project. And then also I kind of kept in touch with a friend of mine, Ben Willoughby, on social media, and was watching his story and, you know, seeing that he was getting into filmmaking, and that some of his filmmaking short stuff that he had been doing was really good. And so I got in touch with him to see if he wanted to take it to the next level and, you know, do a full on documentary of my race. And being that, so I know Ben from the yachting industry. Mm-hmm. And we worked together on a yacht that I worked on a few years ago, and we were actually cabin mates. And so I wanted to see if I could help him, and I felt like he could help me as well in putting together this story. And then we have another angle of the film where my pace and support crew is also in the yachting industry. So I've never done a project that sheds light on just how hard it is to be in the yachting industry and still be able to do something like a 200 mile ultra marathon that takes 10 days out of your life just to do the race.
Yeah.
But then all of the planning and training, and how do you do that when you're working and you're basically, you can get 5 hours notice that you have a charter coming up sometimes. I mean, it's a really, really demanding industry. And I think that a lot of people are intimidated by being able to experience life adventures that other people can experience because they have a different schedule. But with proper planning, and really the most important thing in that is sticking up for yourself and not allowing yourself to be a number. I think that in the yachting industry, there are a lot, it's kind of a known thing that you just need to say yes all the time and do whatever is asked of you. And yes, that's true, you know, to an extent, but with proper communication and kind of letting it be known what you're all about, and you know, it's basically all communication. You know, you can set the expectation and really still live a fulfilling life and do really great things and things that are challenging. And I think that one of the goals of this film for me is to inspire yacht crew to not sell themselves short and know that they can still do really awesome things.
Yeah, well, and I'd say, like, I think it probably, and I can't imagine the whole yacht crew thing. Like, just having watched Below Deck, that is enough to make me not want to be in that industry. Just from like a, you have to be on all the time, it seems like.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think there are a lot of listeners, I'm sure that depending on where they're at, I did it for a long time. Like, I was in field sales and I would have somebody ask me to do something, and I'd be like, sure, I can rent a truck on a Friday night before a holiday and drive that up for you because we didn't deliver it on time. And I do think boundary, like, some of it is boundaries and communication of like, this is what makes Helgi tick, and I can be everything you need me to be, but I need to make sure I get my training in, or right?
Absolutely.
I
Well,
think.
you know, for instance, two of my pace crew are yacht crew. One is first officer, the other is deckhand. They work on the same program. And it's tough for both of them to be able to leave at the same time. And it was very hard for me to get 100%. I'm in, I'm going to be able to do this, which is the only thing that I will accept for any of my support crew. There's no 99%. I need someone who's in because I need to depend on them to be able to get me where I need to be. And I put my blood, sweat, and tears into the logistical preparations to set the expectation and show them exactly what it is that they need to do to be able to support me as best as they can, which is what they want to do anyway. But in exchange for me doing that and, you know, kind of taking these folks under my wing and showing them the 200 space, and showing them how I do this as a yacht crew, I expect that they give me the 100%. So I did get that eventually after explaining all of those things. But basically what ended up having to happen in the end is that they had to step up to their management and say, "Hey, listen, I really want to do this thing. It means a lot to me. It's because of X, Y, and Z. It's going to inspire whatever reasons they gave." But basically, they ended up sticking up for themselves. And at the end of the day, as long as they prepare for that and plan for that, they can find somebody else that can step into their shoes and, you know, temporarily fulfill whatever duties or obligations they have as that yacht crew. And that's across the board. I mean, you know, there's especially as a yacht chef. I've been a temporary yacht chef many times, and I get hired because I can go and hit the ground running. It doesn't matter what the program is. I can go in there and do a charter with short notice. And there's a lot of people like that. I mean, you're trained as a doctor to go in and be a surgeon, if you're a surgeon, and do an operation, and that's expected of you. And there's people like that all the time, but yacht programs, it's hard for them to accept that they would bring someone else in when this person knows all the ropes of what the duties are and things like that. But really, it's just that they're not allowing for this for somebody else to go in and fill those shoes, when it's really that's important that those people stick up for themselves and are able to do those hard things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so last time we talked, you were on a boat or you were on a yacht. How do you train on a yacht?
Well, it's tough to train on the yacht. Depending on the yacht, actually, some yachts have full-on gyms and at least a Peloton or a treadmill,
Yeah.
or workout equipment that you can do, smaller workouts up on the sun deck or something like that. But typically, when I'm at the dock, there's a gym, or I can just go for a run from the dock. It really depends on the program and how busy the program is. For instance, I'm flying out tomorrow to the Bahamas to join the yacht that I work on for my rotation. And there's a charter that's happening right now that is finishing tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and then the yacht goes, a 5 hour journey to where I'm going to get on the yacht, and then the other chef switches out, and then the owners come on basically the next day. So, like, some yachts are the programs are very, very busy, and at different times of year they're more or less busy. But when you're on charter or on trip, and you which means when you have guests on, it's basically all hands on deck, and there's really no time to do anything except for take a 15-minute nap in the middle of the day and maybe a 5 hour sleep at the end of the night. So that's the real challenge in the yachting industry. But I've been in it for since 2011, and I don't take positions where I am working nonstop for weeks on weeks on weeks on weeks. I it's just not a quality of it's not a quality of life that I will accept. And again, it's me sticking up for myself, knowing what I want, and also throughout my career as a yacht chef, I have always gotten a letter of recommendation and tried to get a better position, better paying position every single time. So I think it's really important that people don't settle for less than they're worth.
So, and you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. And then I want to get into a little bit of some of your philosophy, but were you always that way about advocating for yourself, or was there a point in your journey with the disease that you were like, this is the life I want. These are the things I want to accomplish, but I have to use my, like, I have to voice myself. And did that improve your overall quality of life?
I mean, I'm a normal person, and I've made lots of mistakes in my life. I'm an addict. I haven't had a drink now for over 2 years. That was a really tough thing. I've had gambling problems, drug addiction. Lots of things have been a part of my life, and I think they're all mini lessons. But one thing that I think has remained constant for me throughout my life, or at least from 2011, when I became, which ironically, 2011 yacht chef, 2011 also when I started into endurance sports. But this is more about the endurance sports. When I started into that journey, and I was able to achieve the goals that I had set for myself despite having ankylosing spondylitis, which eventually, instead of using the word despite, became because I have ankylosing spondylitis, because I look at it differently. I started to really, admire that about myself and take it as something that, you know, if I didn't have it, then where would my life be? What goals would I have set? Would I have thought that I could just do things and then not cared if I failed? But because I have AS, I've always wanted to, you know, achieve a set a higher bar and prove to myself that I could do it. And so yeah, I mean, I think it's just important that I look at my AS as something that I have benefited from and made a lot of relationships with folks in the advocacy realm, just other people who have ankylosing spondylitis, people who reach out to me and want to know what they could be doing better or what it is that I do. Even though I don't really advise people, I try to shy away from doing that because I know it's such a complex disease and my condition isn't your condition. But yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it's great. And thank you. I know there's some vulnerability there. I'm just like blown away when I've watched you on like Instagram and stuff, and I'm blown away by how determined you are to take on extreme things. I'm sure you're one of just a handful of us out there that takes on things so extreme. But let's talk about movement as medicine. How do you incorporate sort of this philosophy into your life?
You know, kind of going off of what I just said, I've learned a lot about myself. And, you know, I'm definitely not, I may seem like someone who can do anything with ankylosing spondylitis and, you know, never in pain, all these things. I'm sure that there's people who see what I do. And that's the first thing that they see is that he doesn't have it like I have it or something like that. But at the end of the day, I do have ankylosing spondylitis and I do get flares and, they're hard to pinpoint how or when they're going to happen. It's, you know, it's something that I have to just roll with the punches, but, I've kind of proven to myself that as long as I stay moving, that it's usually going to be a better situation than if I were to just kind of veg out and be on the couch. And it's really, I mean, some people would, like my close friends would say that I never stop and I can't stop and I'm always doing something and I just have to be working all the time, which is true. But at the end of the day, like I prefer that because I need to move and I'm doing it now while I can because I don't know if I'm going to be able to move when I'm older. And so, you know, as I age now, I'm just about to be 42. There's wheels that are starting to fall off, you know, and I'm noticing that. So I feel like if I don't continue to move, that it's going to be harder as I go through my life. And especially now, now that I have the femoral acetabular impingement, which is called FAI, it's hip impingement in my left hip, that has developed over time. It's hard to say exactly whether or not it has to do with ankylosing spondylitis or whether it is just an overuse injury from, all of the descending of mountains that I've done in the past, you know, 12 years. But regardless of that, it's something that has reared its teeth and it's present every time that I move my feet every step hurts. Sometimes it's a 1 or 2 out of 10. Sometimes it's a 7 or 8 out of 10. And being that I have taught myself mentally how to push through pain and get to the finish line of these ultra marathons. I don't know what the future holds for me with my hips, because I pushed through the pain and I could be damaging things worse. I've gotten imaging in my hips, intra-articular contrast imaging and MRI, basically to show, I got that to see if I was a candidate for surgery, and I am not a candidate for surgery, according to my doctors, because there's no damage to my labrum, which is kind of the cap of the femur, you know. But there's bone growth on the top of the hip and on the top of the, or the bottom of the hip joint socket and the top of the femur. And where those two contact each other, that's where my pain is. It's called a cam and pincer type deformity. It's a cam bump on the top of my femur. Yeah. Oh. So, but it's hard to say whether or not it's related to ankylosing spondylitis. There's a lot of studies show that many endurance athletes have deformities like this, but they don't present symptoms, meaning they don't have pain. But I do, and I don't have damage. So my coach, for instance, and part of the reason why I have this coach, his name's Kevin Goldberg. He also is the host of the Distance to Empty podcast, which is like a 200-mile focus podcast. But he has undergone a double arthroscopy for both of his hips for the same deformities, but he had the damage to his labrum. So he had a successful surgery and a great return to sport. He's doing really well as an athlete. And so that just gives you an example of somebody else who had the same case that I had, but needed a surgery and I didn't.
Yeah. Yet. It's great. It's interesting. So with that, like with your coach and then your doctors, Dr. Negron and Goodman, what do they do to support you as you are prepping for a 300-mile race, with especially from a rheumatologist standpoint? Like I can picture my rheumatologist right now being like, no, I don't even let you do burpees. You can't do a 300-mile race. So how do they help you in the journey of the preparation?
Yeah. Well, so rheumatologists and orthopedists are, they're obviously two different schools of thought. Dr. Goodman, who's my rheumatologist, he's the one who diagnosed me at age 19, is still my rheumatologist to this day. There were some patches of my life that I didn't see him for a few years, but I've basically been seeing him for my entire life with ankylosing spondylitis, I should say. And when I first got into doing 200s, he was a little bit skeptical, but now he kind of just knows that I do them. And, you know, I always come back to him in one piece. But now we're kind of dealing with this femoral acetabular impingement situation, and it's, even as a rheumatologist, it's hard for him to pinpoint, you know, the why and the what to do. You kind of just have to try things. And so we're staying on the plan that we have. I take Cosentyx right now. There's a possibility that my Cosentyx might not be working as it should, and so we're testing a few other things. I think that my talks with Dr. Goodman, my appointments with Dr. Goodman are mostly, hey, how you doing? Is your motion good? Yeah, he does a test to make sure my range of motion is good. I can always touch my palms to the floor still. There's been little things that have come up here and there. You know, I still have some skin issues every once in a while, and they can be AS related. So we just do the checkup, but most of the time it's like, hey, how's your daughter? And, you know, tells me about what he did this weekend, and I talk to him about, you know, what I'm going to do. And, you know, he's usually always says that he's really proud of me and stuff like that. And, you know, he's a big supporter of everything that I've done. And, he now uses my story to help inspire his new patients who are starting on the road that I started on with him back when I was 19, which involved like, hey doc, like, am I going to be okay? Am I going to have a life? What, you know, what's this look like for me? And, so now he uses my story to be able to help inspire those folks and set them on the right path, which, I mean, above all else, that is my number one goal, is to promote early diagnosis of ankylosing spondylitis, because that's what is going to set people apart and be able to set them on the right track and, you know, not let the progression continue. So that's the relationship that I have with Dr. Goodman. He's actually has donated quite a bit of money to this fundraiser, which will go to the Spondylitis Association of America. And he's actually about to retire in the near future, but I'll be under the care of his daughter, who's going to be taking over his practice. And he's still going to stay on to shadow her and, you know, get her started into it, which is amazing. I mean, I couldn't be luckier to be under someone else's care. I mean, Dr. Goodman is you know, a major part of my success with ankylosing spondylitis. So Dr. Negrone is, I first saw Dr. Negrone at the beginning of 2024 when I was initially trying to figure out what this pain in my hip, or I thought it was pain in my groin at the time. I didn't really know what it was. So we went through the whole, you know, diagnosis process and got the x-rays and MRIs and found that I had FAI. And basically he determined that I wasn't the candidate for surgery. But which, when I went to him, I thought, get the surgery. Coach Kevin did it. It's going to, you know, it might set you back a few months, but you're going to come back stronger and you'll be ready to tackle the monster. And that didn't happen for me. It didn't happen the way that I wanted it to happen. Even though the surgery may have had more complications and, you know, maybe I could have gotten infected or whatever. Basically what he had to, you know, break the news to me was that I've got to do this the hard way. I've got to put the work in and strengthen the area and come back and hopefully things will be better and we don't need this surgery right now. It can happen later, if at all. So he helped me shift my mindset a little bit and start, you know, really holding myself accountable. And he did suggest and prescribe and administer cortisone injections in both my hips. And that has helped, but really, like, the pain has gotten better. I've gotten stronger. I've gotten more healthy. And I think that it's just something that I'm going to have to deal with. But I do think that if I didn't go to him, if I didn't get the injections, if I didn't have to have that mindset change, I probably would be in a pretty tough spot right now. Yeah. with this race coming up, and I may still be in a tough spot, but you know, listening to my body is important to me. And so it's a tough balance. And, you know, talk about mental health, which is another big—
I'm curious how you do that.
It's challenging. You know, as someone who has basically changed their identity to someone who is an ultra marathon runner let alone a 200-mile ultra marathon runner, it's hard when the thing that you love to do is taken away from you. And I feel that I know personally that a lot of fellow ultra runners have had a very colored past, and it's why those people are able to do what they're doing is because they've been through so much and they're able to use those experiences to get through something like a 200 and then take that experience and use it to get through the other stuff. And that's definitely, like, across the board, that's a why for pretty much anybody who goes and does one of these adventures, is they want to experience something that's really hard so that they can, you know, train themselves on how to be a better human, basically. And there's a lot of things that you learn in these ultra marathons to be able to help you do that. But it's full of people who are former addicts, and it's something that when you get to that finish line and you can confirm that you were able to do what you set out to do, which was really, really hard and took so much time and so much work and so much time from your family and your friends and everybody, it's just such a special thing. And then there's negatives with something like that. It's not, on paper, it looks positive. It looks like, wow, you can do something that's just awesome. You know, you're in the 99.9%, but really it's a slippery slope, because once you do that, then that thing becomes the only way that you can get that feeling. And that's what happened for me, is that's why I've done 14 of these 200s and I'm going for my 15th. You know, I was doing four of them in a year, and, you know, it depleted my bank account, put me in debt, you know, messed up my body, most likely, as far as the injuries, the damage that it has done to my hips. You know, and there's been other areas of my life that I have neglected because I want to go out there and be on these adventures. And that's the only thing that makes me feel good. It's something that, because ultra marathon running is kind of, it's relatively new, there's not a lot of information really on how to best deal with that sort of addiction. And, you know, I think that the most important thing that an ultra marathon runner can do is to acknowledge that and, you know, think about balance and think about being present in the moment that they're in and really grateful for being there and all the work that they put in and all these things, instead of just doing the experience. And when you're done, you sign up for another one and it just becomes your thing. Then, I mean, the wheels are going to fall off in so many ways that you're going to ruin your life. And that it's something that I was able to notice. I'm definitely not perfect. I'm definitely not there yet. But because I've noticed it, and really since I quit drinking was when I really had the chance to look within myself. And, you know, as a mentor for other folks who are getting into ultra marathons and people with ankylosing spondylitis, even, I think that it's something that I always warn people is just don't go in too deep. You know, think about things and be grateful and you know, make sure you have balance. The other areas of your life need to have attention. And I feel like that's something that I really want to portray in this film, is just the mental health aspect of it. And so you take that person who goes and gets, you know, has to get that finish line or get that experience, and then you throw in femoral acetabular impingement, and all of a sudden everything that they've invested their life into, or, you know, what they love to do, is taken away from them. And that becomes a major problem, and depression kicks in, and it's just, it's a really, really slippery slope. So balance is very important.
Yeah, I think the, I have a caller, a mentor. She's always telling me I'm not too different when it comes to certain things in my own life. And she always tells me, like, find the middle road. Like, don't take, you know, you don't need to be on the high road and the low road. You have to find the middle road. And it's so difficult, especially, like, probably for you prior to diagnosis. I'm sure you went through a lot, as did many people. And I also think, right, I always think of the years that I couldn't do anything. And then it was like, now I'm making up for lost time. And you want to, like, and I'm like you, I very much look at this disease as something that has been, for better or for worse, like, but more for better, has been additive to my life. And there's community associated with that. So I think one of my last questions for you is, you know, you have built this community and connection to the spondylitis community, and I believe beyond. Like, what is your hope that the impact will be of the documentary for the community you already share, and then broadening the community?
Yeah, I think that the overall impact that I would like to see is, it's not really the people who follow me and support what I'm doing and think that it's beneficial. And I'm talking about, you know, movement and, you know, not necessarily racing, but just being active. It's not that I want to inspire. The people that I want to inspire are the people who don't think that, the people that are against that sort of thing, because I'm not trying to tell people you have to move and you have to do this, even if you can't. Like, I'm not trying to tell people who are in pain that they have to push through their pain and things like that. That's what I do. And I'm admitting on this podcast that I was wrong in a lot of different ways on making those decisions. Do I regret making those decisions? No, definitely not. I enjoy all of the experiences that I have had. I don't want to change anything. I mean, it's all part of who I am. And nobody should really want to change anything in the past. I mean, unless you do something really bad, but
we'll put that one for another episode.
Yeah. No, but I want someone to take that first step, you know, and just take a chance on themselves. Oftentimes, and it's more than just ankylosing spondylitis patients. It's people who would rather not, or try to convince themselves of the reasons why they shouldn't. And I think that you miss out on a lot of opportunities in life if you have that mentality. Don't be too careful, you know. Take chances, and it's just important to hold yourself accountable and, you know, depend on yourself. Obviously, like, support groups and networks and family and friends and all those things are wonderful things, and you should definitely build those relationships and maintain those. But making a relationship with yourself is very, very important in the grand scheme of things, because you're not going to get success because you're friends with Joe Schmo. I mean, they might help get your foot in the door, but right, you got to do the work. And, you know, there's always people who convince themselves not to do things. And it's just, I wish that they wouldn't do that, because they're cutting themselves off from opportunities. I mean, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yes. And Superman is never coming.
I mean, Santa Claus might be, though.
Santa's definitely going to come. But no, I think you're right. I think this is, you and I share a similar, I think, like, mentality around life and the disease. And I think some of it is, you know, also looking at, I say sometimes, like, I'm always looking to, like, just do it better for me or the next person, or when you get into trying to achieve something. But this idea of, like, taking the first step. And I take a yin class, yoga class, and my teacher, you know, he made a comment a couple of weeks ago when we were trying to get into a specific position. And he said, when a human tries to get into a new, do something new that they've never done with their body, it takes 100 times to actually, like, master it. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. And it's, some of it is about giving, when you take those first steps, it's about giving yourself, if you want to call it grace or whatever it is. But I think a lot of people don't want to, I agree, a lot of people, and I would offer, I always tell people what to do, but, and I shouldn't, but I would offer, yeah, I just kind of, you're as alive as I am when it comes to, like, wanting the world to, like, feel as good as you feel when you do certain things. And I would offer, like, those first few steps are, we all stumble on the first few steps or first few hundred. I remember the first time I ran was, like, at 42 or 41 was the first time I actually ran. For the rest, the previous 41 years, I only ran if someone was chasing me. And I got, like, 5 decent years of running in. Now I don't run so much and I lean on other ways of feeling good. But yeah, it's, I think it's, like, just take the leap is.
Absolutely. And, you know, in regards to me running, you know, 200s and stuff, I mean, that obviously it's intimidating for anybody, let alone someone who has ankylosing spondylitis. But I, you know, got here because I was there. And yeah. I took a chance on myself and I took that first step. And, you know, I did it the next day. I took the first step again. And, you know, if you break it down into small, manageable chunks, then it's not that bad. You're not going to be really good at something the first time you do it. And you may never be really good at it. I'm not really good at it. I'm not winning these 200s. I'm getting through them and I'm basically proving to myself that I can do something. I'm not putting myself up against the other people. It's not a good way to do it. It's, you know, it could be bad for somebody to compare to other people. And I think that that's an important part of that equation, is just to, like, be with yourself and hold yourself accountable. Don't worry about what other people think.
Yeah. Okay. So this is my last question and then we're going to wrap this up. You have accomplished a ton in the last 15 years. But with this documentary and the work you're doing for advocacy, if you, like, what is your moonshot, like, for achievement in the advancement of spondylitis?
Well, I mean, early diagnosis, you know, there's tests for the HLA-B27 gene, which is a pretty good marker of whether or not you have it. I just think that, you know, the saying, oh, he's just got a bad back, or she's just got a bad back, or I just have a bad back.
Eradicate back pain.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's so many forms of arthritis, and it's such a complex disease. You know, spondyloarthritis, which is what most people are supposed to be calling ankylosing spondylitis, actually, is misunderstood in a lot of ways, but it's getting better. And I don't think that the moonshot is something. to that's going to happen right away. I think that it's something that's going to take a lot of time and a lot of investment of people's time and energy to be able to figure out a way, a system, if you will, to get early diagnosis, to be something that is tested for, maybe, you know, maybe like maybe it's something that's done in elementary school in PE class or something like that, and there's markers that are looked for. Like when I see someone in the grocery store that has a really hunched over back, I look at that person and I'm like, I bet you they have ankylosing spondylitis, and they may not even know it, you know? And it shouldn't be like that. Like and it's tough to point to a little kid and say, hey, you might have ankylosing spondylitis. But I feel like if it's talked about more and people can recognize, you know, some of the symptoms and signs, that maybe that person might then go and get a test or go to a doctor and at least take the next step in trying to get diagnosed. Early diagnosis is so important. And that's my moonshot, really, is like, get the early diagnosis. Don't be 45 years old and have had back pain that you don't know what it is for 25 years. And then finally they get diagnosed and be like, oh, I wish I would have gone and seen someone sooner. I've been living with this pain for 25 years, over half my life, and I haven't done anything about it because I didn't think I should, or you know what I mean? Like, right. it's ignorant, in my opinion. I think people need to really take charge of their own health. We have so many resources at our fingertips these days with Google and the internet and stuff. A lot of it is, you know, you really have to dig through and filter through the BS, if you will. Yeah. But
spondylitis.
There's a lot of information. Spondylitis.org. Right. There's so many resources, you know, and again, you go back to the money that's necessary to have an organization like the Spondylitis Association of America. I mean, obviously it employs a lot of people. You know, it sponsors this podcast, for instance. That's probably one of the minimal costs of the entire organization. But all these little things, like the support groups, all of the pamphlets and information on AS and little advertisements here and there. There's a lot of little things.
Like research. The
research is the biggest thing.
And yeah, research is huge. Programming for not only patients, but for caregivers and clinicians and EMTs. I get a view of it from the board level, and it's incredible what good stewards of dollars this organization is. It blows me away every quarter. So on that note, how can people, let's repeat, how can people find your page on spondylitis.org?
Okay, so I didn't mention that the fundraising initiative that involves the sponsoring of the miles is in conjunction with an organization called Toe Beans Therapy. And toe beans are the little paw things on a dog or a cat. But anyways, that fundraising initiative will be a link on the page, which is spondylitis.org/Helgi. And you'll be able to find all the information on the Sonoran Odyssey project. If you want to look up what the Arizona Monster is, all this information will be on there, and how you can enter the contest. You know, it's a small donation, is $10 to get a mile, and you'll be supporting the Spondylitis Association of America with that. Obviously, you can donate more if you want, and that would be much appreciated. Spondylitis Association of America needs more funding to be able to do all these amazing things. But spondylitis.org/Helgi is the link. And also, I'm on Instagram, Helgi Olofsson. You can look me up, follow me. We'll be posting all sorts of cool training videos leading up to the race. And we're going to also be sharing live updates while we're out there too. So April
Awesome.
4th through 10th is when the race is, Arizona Monster 300. And we're just really looking forward to it. And I think that this new style of community fundraiser is going to be successful for the Spondylitis Association of America.
Amazing. And will you come back after the race and talk to us again?
Sure. Yeah,
Awesome.
absolutely. I'd love to.
Amazing. Huggy, thank you so much. And you will be in our thoughts, and we'll hold you in the light as you prep for the race.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jill. And I hope to speak to you soon. Happy holidays.
You too. SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.